You're listening to Turnout, opening up the dance scene in Toronto, London, and New York on CIUT 89.5 FM. This podcast was originally broadcast on March 16th, 2016. Good morning, you're listening to Turnout, opening up the dance scene on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Samara Thompson, and joining me are...
Nicole Hamilton.
Małgorzata Nowacka here.
And we are the hosts and producers of Turnout. We'd love your feedback. We can be reached by email at turnout@ciut.fm and connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And you can find all those links on our site at www.turnoutradio.com. We're really excited about today's show. Joining us later will be Clay Ivesons, the educational manager and dancer from Ballet Oregon Canada, to talk about her company's world premiere tour of a new reworking of Sleeping Beauty being presented in Toronto next week. For our gadget of the week, we'll discuss SpinSpot, an interesting little gizmo that helps dancers spin like a whirlwind, and it may also up your game of pin the tail on the donkey. Julia Krause, the co-creator of the newly formed theater company Theater Tonight, and dancer Elizabeth Stewart Morris are here to talk about their inaugural production of Orpheus and Eurydice, being presented at Canadian Stage's Berkeley Rehearsal Hall this week. Up first is Nicole Hamilton, who's speaking with Bakari I. Lindsay, the co-founder of COBA, Collective of Black Artists, about their production of Legacy 4, One Production, One Voice, here on Turnout, opening up the dance scene on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Thank you, Samara. And good morning to Bakari. I just want to start off by just talking a little bit about this incredible gentleman's background and history, and he joins us live in studio right now. Good morning to you, Bakari.
Ah, good morning, Nicole.
Good morning. And how are you this morning?
Ah, great. I'm a morning person, so morning's always fabulous for me.
I love that. Yeah. I love that you're a morning person.
Yeah. At 3 o'clock, I'm not that good, but morning is definitely my thing to
And I would suspect for an individual who works as hard as you do that you would need to be a morning person.
Yeah, I've always been a morning person. I think traditionally the way structures are from the Caribbean, you have to be a morning person.
Right.
Yeah, so I think I'm better. I'm better in the morning. Between 3 and 5, not so good.
Okay.
Morning and night. I can do late nights, early mornings.
Excellent. I love that. Well, start off, if you can, please, by telling us, what is COBA?
COBA, Collective of Black Artists, founded in 1993. The genesis simply, there were four dancers in the city at that time. Three will graduate. I was still a student of School of Toronto Dance Theatre. And the dance scene didn't quite reflect the African diaspora. There were several community groups doing work that comes out of an African experience, but no one really aspiring to look at work from a professional standpoint that spoke to our legacy. And so we came together first to do a project to sort of fold a niche for African History Month projects in schools. And I think that was the birth of Koba. It grew and grew, and we felt that the more we created work, there was a need for social activism around Black dance. And I think that's sort of the Cliff Notes version of the genesis of Koba and what Koba stands for. It's almost 23 years later, and we continue to do work that pushes the envelope and the notions of what Black dance can be and look like, and what Black dancers dance about and what they look like on stage. So,
awesome. And, you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking about the many years that the company has been in existence. I'm curious to know, what has inspired you? What inspired you as who inspired you as an artist? Are there any other artists that inspired you prior to the beginnings of Koba?
For me, I would say coming out of my early dance experiences in the Caribbean, in Trinidad and Tobago specifically, and, I could think of Kieran Sims-Maynard, who is a no-name in Canada. She doesn't even dance anymore. I mean, she's working in medicine now. And just her notion, she was not a folk dancer, and I came out of a folk tradition, but she was a contemporary dancer working with folk dancers, and I was just really intrigued by the sort of the clarity that her movement had. And so I was always really fascinated by the fact that how can I, very early in my career, how can I take folk and traditional work and give it the kind of tweaking to say different things than it's saying in a folk and a traditional context. And so I think that experience has sort of, journeyed his way all through to what Koba is sort of the main artistic focus of the company right now.
Right. And since it's been founded, I must ask you, what do you feel the scene right now, as far as Black dance is concerned, do you feel that it has been bettered by the work that Koba has been doing and the work of many other wonderful companies within the city? How do you feel it compares to the 90s when Koba first started?
Definitely, there's definitely recognition and understanding and identity, I should say, of Black dancers and people identifying themselves within that particular genre. For me, I'm worried because I guess, like it or not, I'm a senior artist, and I don't quite see a generation coming behind. Mm-hmm. There are people, dancers, I mean, and it's so gross to sort of delineate things to skin color, but there are some dancers of Black ancestry, African ancestry, performing, but I don't see a sense of a Black dance movement the way you probably look at in the States, for instance. And that concerns me because, I'm not ready to step off stage, but I'm looking at, my transition into other things in terms of dance and Black dance. And somehow I see people creating work and work's being created, but I don't see a sense of legacy. I mean, pardon the pun. And that concerns me. But the Black dance movement has certainly come a tremendous way from when we started in the 90s. I mean, when we began, there was Usifiri Dance and Drum Ensemble led by Vivian Scarlett, and which was passed on to her by Kwame Williams and Shani Mackenzie Britt. And there was Caribbean Dance Theater and a couple of community-based organizations, and they're still around, and they're doing work, and they're working with children. And now there's several people coming into the mix, and Dance Emerge is doing a tremendous job of sort of introducing the various facets all over Canada. But they're very small facets, and there are people who are working and doing their own thing in their little corner somewhere. But to say there's a Black dance movement, for me, I would love to see more happening. And there have been discussions. The people, Kevin Ormsby, Ronald Taylor, Patrick Parsons, we've sort of been talking about sort of getting something going.
Right.
Starting off some sort of annual activity that really highlights what we do, because I think, we're working hard in the corner, sort of very quietly, and it's time to make some noise.
Yes, and speaking of making noise, I think to myself, what can be done other than the work that yourself and individuals like Kevin Ormsby, those that you've mentioned, what else can be done by the other artists in the city to ensure that that black dance movement continues with strength?
I think we just need to come together. And I think what we are proposing is to have that period where we're all in the same room talking about what we do, some of the struggles, some of the highlights of what we are proud of. And I think, I mean, you know, we talked about, you know, we go to these conferences and it's all about woes and what's not happening. And, you know, and I remember saying at that meeting, well, yeah, the woes are always going to be there. But I mean, just to be in the room together and just know what's out there. There are generations who probably don't even know we exist.
Wow.
You know, and that's not a bad thing. It's not their fault. It's not our fault. But I think we're just all so busy trying to keep afloat that we don't even have time to recognize or celebrate with each other or
right.
even support each other unless it's a crisis. You know, and I think that's got to stop. I think I remember going to Casimiro from Winnipeg. He held a mini conference a few years ago. And, you know, Vivian was there, Zab was there, his company members, Patrick, myself, we were all there. And it was, I mean, and it wasn't a huge thing, you know, in comparison to other things that are happening. But just for all of us being in the same space and, you know, talking, and it was like, wow, you know, this needs to continue. But again, you know, resources, time, many facets just does not allow it to happen. And I think we have to sort of stop complaining about those things and make it happen.
Wow, I love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you are just tuning in, you're listening to Turnout. When we're opening up the dance scene on CIUT 89.5 FM, and we're here sitting in with Bakari I. Lindsay and having a fantastic discussion with regards to the black dance movement and specifically to COBA. Now, you mentioned when you talk about legacy and you talk about all of the things that are a part of that, talk to us about legacy, because that is something that you are currently working on in COBA.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Because I mean, when I was showering this morning to get here, I'm going, oh, legacy, geez, it's a big topic, and for me, and I think for COBA and the entity and the members of COBA, I think it's about legacy comes with responsibility. I think, you know, tradition, you can choose to follow or not to follow, but when you have a legacy, it's kind of an imposed responsibility. Because you're saying you have this legacy, and what are you going to do with it? You know, how are you going to honor it? How are you going to continue it? How are you going to support it? How does it support what you're doing currently? So, you know, from a COBA's perspective, legacy is about responsibility. And so for us, it has been looking at traditional work and honoring it and presenting it in a way that audiences are educated about some of the places and spaces in which this work comes from. It's about creating new work that highlight the African black experience in kind of globally. In Shaman Headley's work on the program Meme, she's looking at the abduction of the Nigerian girls. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was interesting when I walked to the studio weeks after and said, oh, she's doing Meme, and they were, you know, hashtag faith. It's like, what are you talking about? And then, you know, when she broke it down, it's like, you know, yeah, you know, this thing flashed across the Facebook pages for a week, and then it was all gone.
Right.
And this is still a huge global issue. And many issues flash across, you know, social media and go by. And for us, we are primarily focused around the black issues, and therefore that was something that stayed with her. So legacies is about taking responsibility for the good, the bad, and the ugly. Because sometimes, you know, the wonderful drumming and dancing and smiling, it's great. You know, we all want to study that. We all want to feel that. We all want to come and see that. But there are Africa and the Caribbean and the diaspora have other issues, and we have to be able to embrace all of those with the lovely, beautiful, wonderful rhythms and colors that come with us.
Right. And where is Legacy going to be showing?
Legacy is at the Winchester Street Theater. It opens tomorrow night, March 17th at 8 p.m. There are three performances that are 8 p.m. So Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, there are 8 p.m. performances. And there's Sunday performance at 3 p.m.
Okay. And is it a child-friendly performance aspect? Is it something that the whole family can come and see? I like to ask those questions of our guests, because sometimes we do have individuals who say, you know, can I bring my young child?
Um, some of the work challenges social issues.
Yes.
And, you know, I guess I'm probably the wrong person to ask that, because I believe in engaging children. Mm. I think if a child can engage in almost anything, if there's direction. And so for me, I would say yes. But you have to be prepared to answer questions and be engaged. It's not a babysitting work where you can put your child down and they will just enjoy and smile. But it's definitely child friendly. I think they'll work on the program for the whole family. I think Shaman's work, for instance, looks at social issues. My work, Spiritual Essence, looks at spirituality. And Diallo, which is choreographed by Darren Nimmo and Hedley Lindsay, although it challenges social notions, it's a wonderfully vibrant work that comes out of the Senegambia region, which features amazing, energy and dancing from the African continent. So there's something for everyone. You know, child-friendly, I would say yes.
Wonderful.
But, you know, I will not say it's blanket babysitting where you put the child there, you have some work to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And it's an awesome experience everyone, as you mentioned, young, old. They should be able to have that platform to be able to learn without without that barrier of age being there.
It's the purpose of art.
Yes.
You know, it is there to teach, it is there to engage, it is there to ignite. And I feel that if questions arise, it's coming from a place of knowing, because that child would have just seen something and the question is being asked based on what they felt, what they saw, and they want, and the fact that they're asking the question, it means that they've connected, it's resonated with them, and therefore they want further knowledge. And that's, for me, the best gift that we can get for the work that we're doing.
Right.
You know, the fact that we've ignited questions in anyone, you know, so especially a child. You know, so
okay,
bring them along.
And, you know, we are just about out of time. And quite honestly, I could sit here and talk with you for 2 hours because, you know, this is such a wonderful conversation, I think, for us to have, specifically with regards to the Black Dance Movement. And before we do close, I would like to ask if you could share with our listening audience just that piece that you'd like to leave us with regards to the show that's going to be starting tomorrow, or with regards to the Black Dance Movement as you were speaking, something you'd like to leave us with so that we can ponder as we start to prepare to come to Legacy tomorrow.
Well, the interesting thing is that on this program we have three apprentice dancers who've come through the Koba School and are working with us. And I remember giving a note to one of the dancers, and it's interesting when I think of young dancers emerging dancers, and I was getting really frustrated because the work requires that they dig really deep emotionally, you know, and I remember saying to her, I said, you know, dance is not about your feet. It's about your heart. And if you have the desire, then your feet will follow.
Yes.
And they just looked at me with blank stare. But then one of our ex-company members just sat there and goes, oh, that's really deep. I want to write this down. So for me, that's probably what I would like to leave, that, you know, for me, dance is about the heart.
Mm.
And if you have really strong desire, the body will do anything, because that's what's propelling you to move.
Beautifully said. I'd like to thank you so much for joining us in studio today. And where can individuals find out more about COBA?
COBA, our website is www.cobainc.com. And just come by our studios at 585 Dundas Street West, Daniel Spectrum. We're there most days from 8 to 11 p.m. So just drop by and say hello. Very friendly crowd, so don't have to be intimidated. Just drop by and say hello.
Yes, and I've been there, so I would agree. Very friendly crowd. And we should remind our audience as well to be sure to attend Legacy.
Legacy, the Winchester Street Theater, 80 Winchester Street at Parliament and Winchester, 8 p.m. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, 3 p.m. Sunday.
Beautiful.
Legacy for COBA.
Wonderful. Thank you so much again for joining us in Studio Bakari. It was a pleasure. It was a pleasure. And we are now moving to a music break. Following that, we will have more guests joining us in studio here on Turnout.
Hello, I'm Samara Thompson, and you're listening to Turnout, opening up the dance scene on CIUT 89.5 FM. Our apologies for the little tech glitches. You were just listening to Calypso Breakdown, a great piece by Ralph McDonald from Saturday Night Fever. Orpheus and Eurydice are in love, and on their wedding night, Eurydice is bit by a snake and dies. The horribly sad Orpheus goes down to the underworld and brings her back to life. He convinces Hades and Persephone to let her go, but there's one condition. Eurydice must walk behind him as they go up to the upper world, and Orpheus must not look at her. But he sneaks a peek, and she's lost to him forever. This is the story upon which Theater Tonight is basing their first production, aptly called Orpheus and Eurydice. The physical theater piece, which is put in a modern context, is presented by a cast of 20 performers and is co-directed by Jules Krauss, who is joining me in the studio, along with Elizabeth Stewart Morris, the co-producer and one of the performers. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Jules, you came to Canada by way of Germany, met Nicholas Welsh, who is your co-director, fell in love, and created an earlier version of this piece, which was geared towards high school students and really inspired by your relationship. Now, several years later, still in love with Nicholas, you've created this newer version. What and why was what's the difference?
I think when we first created it, the focus was a lot on first love, because we were first in love. We had just met that year. And now I think we've looked at it more from an angle of, now we're in a long term, we've been together now for 7 years. So what are things that can break a relationship up that are deal breakers, so to speak? So you were giving the overview of the tale, the myth. We kind of went with one, there's like different versions of it. And the one we went with is where Eurydice goes into the forest and has this little thing with this forest creature, like is enthralled by his beauty, and then gets bitten by a snake and dies. So we looked at the snake bite with, like, what in a modern context, what would that be? What breaks a relationship apart? What are things that are slowly making it less exciting than when you first meet, if that makes sense?
That does. It sounds a little stressful on a relationship to really delve into those things.
Yeah, you know, we've been working together for, I think, ever since we met. So we've by now found a balance. But it's a nice meditative look at ourselves as we create, and it's neat because it's a collaborative process. That was actually a neat way to connect with the performers, to ask them, like, what are things that would break up, that would be a deal breaker for them.
So, Elizabeth, how did they present that to the performers?
Well, the entire process has been really incredible, because the two of them are able to create such a phenomenal, safe, creative work environment. I mean, as a professional actor, performer, in this world, it's sometimes hard to come by, like, such a wonderful, creative and warm space to be a part of. So any of the exercises that we did immediately came from a place of an ability to trust and just explore. So, you know, different kinds of exercises where we'd, you know, close our eyes and imagine, you know, certain circumstances, and then go from there, see what physical movement would come from specific concepts, ideas, images, music. Music was a big part of mm-hmm. our exploration as well. So, I think that's how we got into those nitty-gritty areas from tapping into experiences in our own lives in a private way and then bringing that out into the work.
Mm-hmm. Jules, you really have a combination of both theater and movement. How did you go about combining those and then finding a way to make it so it would be presented on stage?
Well, it's interesting because, like you said, I grew up in Germany and I came to Canada about 6 years ago, six, 7 years ago. And when I first started to branch out into the theater world, wanting to pursue it professionally, there was a sense of being different because of my accent. And it's not very strong, but it is there, particularly when I'm nervous. So it might be stronger now. But when I was, I had the fortunate experience of working with the Empty Space in Kitchener, which is a physical theater company. They do incredible work. And Majdi Boumattar, who's the artistic director and my mentor, he, in their work, it's a lot of improv. And so you don't rely on your words per se, you rely on your expression and your movement. And for the first time, I felt I fit in and I was not different. And I realized that the thing that came really easy to me, which was expressing myself through the body, was actually a thing that is a thing, you know? So from there, I went to, you know, train with a bunch of different theaters all over North America, went to see a lot of different physical theater shows. And I love watching people. So I think sometimes it's just starting with an exercise and from there picking up the gestures or the movement sequences that really speak.
So Elizabeth, did they have you do a lot of improv?
Yeah, absolutely. The first half of the rehearsal at least was all exploration in different ways, different kinds of exercises, different kinds of work, both on your own and with a group of people. Some of our favorites, my favorite for sure, was finding ways of either taking somebody who was completely, you know, limp, if you will, on the floor and finding a way as a group without words, without using your hands, find a way to stand them up. Or find a way to, you know, carry somebody over you in a group of people, but, you know, with some other thing, like not necessarily not using your hands, but in some other kind of, you know, restrained way, so that you have to be creative. You have to sort of impulsively figure things out on your feet. And it created such a fabulous sense of trust with all of us. So yeah, we started out with lots of that kind of exploration at first, and then they would slowly bring in the structure of the show as they saw it, as they'd done it before, but integrate the new work that we had been doing, mm-hmm. and making it our own in a way, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And with a cast of 20, that's a lot of bodies to manage.
Mm-hmm, it is, yeah, but it's neat because I think one of the most beautiful journeys for me as a director, as an observer, is to see the performers lowering down their guard. Because even there's a lot of dancers in the cast, but even with dancers, there is sometimes a guard in terms of how close you let people come to you and how you can just really let yourself go and trust. And that's always such a beautiful journey to see that. Slowly, the guard going down and the trust coming up, and then to see that in the body is quite lovely. But yeah, it's a lot of organization. I have to say, my partner Nicholas Walsh, who's the co-director, that's his work. Like, I think in terms of co-working, I'm the imagery person, and he's a drummer, so he's so good with rhythm and specifics and knowing exactly, okay, if you get up, then you have to do this. Like, he also loves to watch sports, so I think he has a great way of seeing shapes and making things happen on stage where I'm sometimes lost there. So it's a nice, I think in that way we balance each other out nicely, yeah.
Well, I'm excited to see this. It sounds really interesting.
Yeah, please come, yeah.
So how can we get more information?
You can go online to Facebook and like our Theater Tonight page. Theater Tonight is the company that mm-hmm. is producing the show. You can buy tickets online at Canadian Stage's website. Just scroll down to What's On. Click that and you'll find Orpheus and Eurydice there. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Theater Tonight, both of them. So, yeah.
And tickets are going fast from what I understand. So mm-hmm. if our listeners are interested, they should definitely get on the Canadian Stage website and buy some tickets.
We open tonight, and I think there's only 3 tickets left for tonight. So
wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For your first performance, or first production with a new production company, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
Well done. Wow. So again, it's happening at Berkeley Street Hall at Canadian Stage, March 16th to 20th. We've been speaking with Jules Krauss, the co-artistic, the co-director, and with Elizabeth Stewart Morris, the co-producer and one of the performers of of Orpheus and Eurydice. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much.
We're going to take a quick break. I'm Samara Thompson, and you're listening to Turnout, opening up the dance scene on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Please join us for a special CIUT fundraising event featuring guest speaker David Barsamian, founder, director of Alternative Radio. David will speak to the topic of ecocide, war on the planet. A Q&A session with the audience will follow. This CIUT fundraising event will be held on Monday, March 21st, beginning at 12 noon. It'll be held in the Debates Room, Hart House, U of T. Tickets are only $30, and you may purchase them in advance online at CIUT.fm. Tax receipts will be provided. An afternoon with David Barsamian, Monday, March 21st, beginning at 12 noon. Get your ticket at CIUT.fm today.
Right here, right now, every day.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
CIUT 89.5, the sound of your city.
Welcome back to Turnout on CIUT 89.5 FM. We've had a full morning of wonderful guests, and joining me is my co-host and producer.
Hello.
Hello, Mal. Mal, so I'm excited because I love the fact that here we get to talk about gadgets. And dance artists use a huge array of interesting, useful, and sometimes bizarre gadgets to get their job done, as we know. But each week we highlight a new tool and some kind of gizmo that attracts the curiosity. So on today's show, we're going to be welcoming our guest who's joining us on the line, on the phone. And we're going to be talking about something called Spin Spot. So I believe we do have her online with us. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm doing wonderful. How about you?
I am well, thank you. To our listening audience, we want to welcome you. You are the founder, the CEO, the woman behind Spin Spot. If you can introduce yourself.
Certainly. I am Angela Pineda Kyle, and I am the inventor of the Spin Spot. And co-owner with my husband, Barry Kyle.
Wonderful. And Angela, you are joining us from in studio. You're on a different time zone, so you're in the central time zone, I believe.
Yes, we are, right here in Texas.
Yeah, so thanks for joining us so early. Let's get right into Spin Spot. What is Spin Spot, if you can share that with us?
Certainly. The Spin Spot is a training tool for dancers to help them with pirouette training. That's one of the things they can do. They can work their spotting abilities, and it also works balance and maintaining turnout.
So can we just talk about what the Spin Spot actually is? It's a small tool. What does it look like exactly?
It is a 9-inch round disc that sits about half an inch off the floor. It sits on the floor, and it does not move other than it is a turntable, in effect. And the turntable creates what I call a force vortex, or centripetal force is what is used to make this work. And what it does is it allows the dancer to find their center. And it is very unforgiving. They have to find their center by using their core and holding their balance. It is just a remarkable tool to help a dancer find that.
Okay. And Nicole, you're the one who brought Spin Spot to... Where did you see Spin Spot? People are using it everywhere. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, they are. And, you know, this is the really unique thing here. Malai, I actually first met Angela. We were both adjudicators for the Creation Dance Championships. And we had met in the U.S., Angela, So yeah, we actually didn't meet here in Canada, and that was where I had seen the Spin Spot. Angela and her husband Barry had actually brought it on stage, started talking about it, and I saw these students getting on this small device and spinning on it. So my first thought was that the benefit was to teach students how to spot. But my understanding thereafter was that it does much more than that, as Angela was just sharing with us, balance as well. And I believe there's more as well, Angela, correct? It's more than just balance,
correct,
and spotting.
Right. One of the things that I absolutely love about the Spin Spot is that the turnout maintenance. You know, anyone can stand on the floor in a turnout and not use their muscles properly. The floor sticks their foot where it is, and it's not going to move, so they don't have to engage certain muscles in the thighs and in the abdomen to maintain that turnout. But when you are on the Spin Spot, there is nothing. There's no resistance. And if you are not pushing your turnout and holding it, then you're going to migrate and start moving parallel. So it forces the dancer to engage those muscles to maintain that turnout. And once that becomes muscle memory, they will do it whether they're standing on the floor flat-footed or in releve or while turning.
Okay. All right. And, you know, we're almost out of time, and this gadget is such an exciting one. But one of the things that we do want to bring to the attention of our listeners is that it's portable, correct?
Yes, very portable. It only weighs a pound and a half. It's only 9 inches in diameter and a half an inch thick. It goes great in any dance bag.
Okay. All right. And the cost of it?
It starts at $59. And that is for, there are some colors that are $59, there are some colors that are $64, and then our prints that are zebra prints, those are exciting, are $69.
Okay, all right. Okay, well, I'd like to thank you for joining Mal and I here in studio, and again, waking up so early to share with us more about the Spin Spot.
Sure.
We're just about out of time. We aren't out of time, in fact, but if you can tell individuals where they can locate you online, please.
Certainly at www.thespinspot.com.
Okay.
And also, if you visit turnoutradio.com, all of the information about our guests on the show today will be available later this afternoon, so you can check back our website and get links to everything we're talking about here.
Right. So we're bringing Spin Spot to Canada, to the U.S., to everywhere.
Yes.
Through Turnout. So thank you again for joining us, Angela.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
It was a pleasure. And we are about to take another musical break. We'll be right back with Turnout.
Welcome back to Turnout. I'm Małgorzata Nowacka here on CIUT 89.5 FM. And I have here in the studio Clea Iveson, General Manager of Education at Ballet Jorgen Canada and also a dancer with the company. Ballet Jorgen Canada is widely recognized for its innovation, and it was formed in 1987 and is the only major Canadian ballet company with a repertoire exclusively of original works. Ballet Yoga in Canada shares the experience of ballet with more communities in Canada than any other dance company and gives over 120 performances a year, reaching over 50,000 people in rural or urban and inner city locations across Canada and in northern United States. I have to say rural is very hard to pronounce. And we're going to be talking here today about their Sleeping Beauty production, which features original choreography to Tchaikovsky's beautiful score and is inspired by a native Saskatchewan tale of how the rose got its thorns. So again, I have welcome Clea.
Thank you, Mal.
So how long have you been with the company?
I've been with the company going on 25 years now. I joined in 1991, so hopefully my math adds up there. And I started as just a youngster, as an apprentice in the company, and ultimately really fell in love with everything that this company does and have contributed in many ways other than just dancing. And I'm now the education manager of all of our programming for youth.
And you are also dancing.
And yes. I'm also still dancing, yeah, hanging on to that. I'll be on stage with Sleeping Beauty as the queen in the production.
Wonderful. So in this production, how is the story of how the rose got its thorns integrated into the Sleeping Beauty?
I think the best way to sum it up in terms of its integration is that in any classic fairy tale, there's a tension between good and evil. And I think in this, we've set it more, in the context of being in a garden, and it's the tension between winter and summer, and, you know, cold and dark versus light and warmth. And, you know, that's what takes place in a garden. And, so the characters are represented as Carabosse being the evil, dark, wintry sort, and the lilac fairy is the warm, sunny, magical character. So those two magical characters exist, and their child is the rosebud. And so this child is torn between the two worlds of wintry darkness and summery lightness, and the ultimate product is that this rose has two sides, and it has a thorny, hard edge side as a beautiful, magical, amazing creation of a flower. So the story will unfold to show how those two characters in that battle with each other for this child ultimately result in the rose having thorns and existing in both worlds.
So in terms of the company presenting original creations only, what does that mean?
It really just means that we create everything here on us with artists in Canada, with Canadian artists. So we're not buying a production that somebody else created somewhere else. We create it here, and it might be, you know, in the tradition of Marius Petipas, for example, in this Sleeping Beauty, because we very much honor the past and the tradition and the classical aspect of the art form that we work in. But that being said, let's make it new and relevant and engaging to today's audiences and today's crowds and young people, because it's an art form that really can translate through the ages, but honoring the past and the tradition is very important. So we combine all of that into our own productions, and we create them, and we dance them, and we tour them, and we create programming to get people more interested in dance and in every one of our productions. And, going to a small town in southern Saskatchewan is a highlight, because we're bringing dance to people that may not have had the opportunity to see it before, and we're bringing them a production that is going to feel great for them to see.
To those listeners just tuning in, you're listening to Turnout on CIUT 89.5 FM, and I'm Margarita Novatska here with Clea Iveson talking about the Sleeping Beauty showing at Betty of Oliphant Theatre March 24th to 27th at in Toronto. So I understand you are a dancer of the company, but you also have a baby.
Yep.
So how do you do that? How do you manage all of that together? How old is the baby, first of all?
Well, my little girl is almost 22 months, so she's 2 months shy of 2 years old. at this point, and she's everywhere, getting into everything, and exploring her world, which is a fascinating thing to watch. And I'd say that it's, you know, I mean, that balance that one has to have, and I think the trick is that right now, for me as a dancer, I'm not touring anymore, because taking a little person on the road like that is, I think, would be too much for not only myself, but for her and for everyone else in that environment. So I'm performing in the shows that are closer to home, so that I can manage that kind of time. You just time management. You have to, you know, I've got to pick her up from daycare when daycare closes. I can't be late. I think it adds richness to me as a person and to the life that I'm leading. But it's a challenge, and you have to stay on top of it.
So how would you say your time management skills have improved since you've had the baby?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, the hard deadlines that we work with, which is the curtain goes up and it always goes up at the time it's supposed to, you know, doesn't necessarily apply to everything in life where you sort of push your limits as much as you can. And, you know, you work till 10 o'clock at night because you got to get things done. When you have a little girl, you work until the time is up, and that's the time is up. And so you have to be more efficient with everything that you're doing, and really, you know, plan things out carefully, because you can't just keep going. You have to make it happen.
So essentially, you know, we could recommend children as a great time management tool almost.
Yes, they do force you into it and challenge it at every state, step of the way, because, you know, you think it might only take you 5 minutes to get dressed, but with a two-year-old, it can take sometimes a half an hour to convince someone to get dressed. So, you have to build, you know, your time appropriately, taking into account all the variables that a child brings into that timing.
So back to ballet, Jorgen. What is it like to see a company evolve over the amount of time that you've been with a company? What has happened to the company over time?
I mean, it's... You know, when you're so close to something, you almost don't even see it when it's happening. So sometimes, yes, when you do step back, you think, wow, how far have we come? Look at, like, this is the way we're doing this now. And when I think back of, you know, touring in the early days and you know, the kinds of maybe hotels that we stayed in and you know, the work that we were doing until, you know, 1 a.m. And I just think we've come such a long way in terms of how we've structured everything to support the kind of growth that we've always wanted to do. And look at, we've done it, and we've grown as a company, and we've grown in our operational integrity at the same time. And those two things, they go together, and you can lose sight of it when you're in it every single day, all day long. I don't know. It's exciting, because I think I've put a lot into it over the years, just with my own passion of towards dance and towards wanting to create more dance, get more dance out there and share it. And I think the company is sharing it with more people, getting more of it out there, and the quality level of what we're doing is just continues to rise. And so it makes me proud, really, to have been a part of it. And to put my finger on what exactly I did is hard, really. I just have done it. I've been there for it all along the way, and I probably made some mistakes, but in the end, over those years, it has grown, it has changed, and it's become stronger and better.
So how would you define the identity of the company? So there are a number of ballet companies in Canada right now. Ballet Jorgen in Canada tours the most, is the most portable one.
Mm-hmm.
And tours the most to most places. So what is the identity of the work on stage? Is there a difference? What can people expect that differentiates the character of what's on stage?
I think because we're portable, we're also we're very lean in who is on the road. So I think each dancer and each person that works for us encompasses a lot more than a single task, because we have to do more than one thing each, really. So I think the richness that comes with people that are engaging with an organization on many levels, as an artist, as a dancer, as, you know, helping out with selling merchandise or helping out by, you know, stocking shoes, or I think the whole person really comes into the investment that is seen on stage by an audience. And yes, they're not going to know that that particular dancer also does these other tasks, but I think it really comes through in that artist's commitment to the work being done, because the investment is great. And I think it goes the other way around. I think as a company, we spend a lot of our energy and time investing in our artists to help them grow and become not just better artists, but stronger people. And so I think that really comes through when we're on stage, and maybe not in a tangible way, but having been here for this long, and I think that connection really makes us special. And I think people feel that when they come and see the show, when they meet our artists, whether it's signing an autograph right after the show or at a community event that we do or a masterclass we teach or attending a summer dance program. I think that's the real difference. Families, kids, people come and they engage with us and they feel that connection around the passion of the people that are in it and involved. And I think it gets people excited and engaged and makes us something special in their lives.
And what about the accessibility of the work? Because we did have a talk before we went on air where we discussed about that concept. So can you just talk about how that integrates into the work that is being presented by Bali Jorgen?
Yeah, I think that when you come and see a show with us, is that you're going to be entertained. You're going to see a really good show that's going to make you sit and absorb something, whether it's in awe or just in beauty or in warmth or in humor. And that experience of just enjoyment at seeing a show is a simple feeling that I think we all seek out. We want to escape into a world where we're just going to have a nice and fun and enjoyable time. And I think when you come and see our show, you're going to get that no matter what. Maybe some people more than others, depending on how much you really like ballet. But when you come in and you're going to see this show, you're going to be fully engaged and you're going to access what's on stage. So I think that makes what we do really good and really engaging for our audiences to come to. So it's not a chore to come and see us, to come and sit in our audience and watch our show. It's going to be enjoyable, and you're going to have those couple hours of escaping and seeing something beautiful. So coming to see Sleeping Beauty on Easter weekend is just going to add to the upcoming spring that we're all waiting for.
Well, thank you so much for joining me on air today. I've been talking to Clea Iveson in regards to the Sleeping Beauty presented by Bali Jorgen Canada, March 24th to 27th at Betty Oliphant Theatre. And you can get more information at ballyjorgencanada.ca. And you can also visit our website at www.turnoutradio.com. And everything will be there this afternoon, so you can get links to everything we talked about today on the show. And thank you so much.
Thanks, Mal. It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to Turnout, opening up the dance scene on CIUT 89.5 FM. We're the producers and hosts for the show. I'm Samara Thompson.
And I'm Małgorzata Nowacka.
And I'm Nicole Hamilton.
We'd like to thank our guest, Clea Iveson, who's the educational manager and dancer from Ballet Oregon Canada, who is here to talk about her company's world premiere tour of a new reworking of Sleeping Beauty, being presented at various theaters in the GTA this March. We'd also like to thank Angela Pineda Kyle, who was on the phone with us to explain the Spin Spot, our gadget of the week. For more information, go to her website, www.thespinspot.net. Julia Kraus, the co-creator of Theatre Tonight, and dancer and co-producer Elizabeth Stewart Morris, were here to talk about Orpheus and Eurydice at Canadian Stage's Berkeley Rehearsal Hall, March 16th to 20th. Also, a thank you to Bakari Lindsay, the co-founder of COBA, Collective of Black Artists, here to talk about their production of Legacy 4, One Production, One Voice, being presented at the Winchester Street Theater March 17th to 20th. And of course, we'd like to thank our tech, Ariel Simonte, and his crew for all that they've done. We've also love your feedback. We can be reached by email at turnout@ciut.fm and connect with us on Facebook and Twitter and on Instagram. And you can find all those links on our site at www.turnoutradio.com. For our closing music, we have a great piece called Tafari by Ino Mas. Thanks for listening to Turnout here on CIUT every Wednesday morning. We hope your week finds you turning out to dance. Turnout, opening up the dance scene in Toronto, London, and New York on CIUT 89.5 FM. This podcast was originally broadcast on March 16th, 2016.